Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sharon Brody, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Few engines in the city of Boston are as powerful as the Redevelopment Authority. If that name sounds like something out of the Eisenhower era, as one of our guests today notes, that's because it is.
The city of Boston has an opaque process for planning and authorizing major development projects, an approach that many other cities have abandoned in favor of more transparent, independent mechanisms.
The BRA is tightly controlled by the mayor. It has a finger in nearly every major development decision in the city, and it's going anywhere, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. The person who replaces Tom Menino as mayor will wield real power, real authority, much of it through the running of the BRA.
And joining us now to talk more about the history and future of the BRA is Rachel Slade. She's an editor at Boston Magazine, and she wrote the recent article, The Authority. Rachel Slade, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Paul McMorrow, an editor at Commonwealth Magazine. Paul, welcome.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to hear your take on the BRA. Should the city keep its centralized planning and development organization? Should it be reformed? Residents of Boston, the West End diaspora, downtown crossing gentry, waterfront pioneers, we want to hear from you. What is your take on the BRA? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Radio Boston. So, Rachel, in your piece, you call for the abolition of the BRA. No. Pussyfooting around here. Get rid of it. And why do you call for that?
Well, here's the problem. There's an inherent conflict of interest in the Boston Redevelopment Authority. Really, its charge when it was set up in the late 1950s and early 60s was to stimulate development in the city. And at that time, the city was still recovering from the Great Depression. And many cities around the country were doing the same thing. They were basically taking down what we would love now, which is, you know, dense urban development. And instead, they were making the city safe for suburbanites. So, you know, the main idea was get people into the city, mm-hmm. get people back out of the city. And it really supported, you know, what is now known as white flight. But the idea was, you know, get those turnpikes up, get the elevated up, and build buildings that had ample parking so you could get people in and get people out again.
And that was certainly not unique to Boston.
No.
That was the thinking of the time.
It was absolutely the thinking of the time. And so the BRA is really an emergency measure created in the late 1950s and 60s, an incredible concentration of power to enable the government, in this case the city government, to mow down an entire series of neighborhoods, actually, and create a city in the image that they thought was appropriate for the future.
So when the BRA was first created, was it actually responsible for the demolition of the West End, or was it tangentially involved with that? I'm not entirely clear on if they seem to have been created at about the same time.
Yeah, actually, you're correct. The demolition came before the creation of the BRA, but the BRA then was quickly set up to then develop. Because they weren't actually sure what they were going to do when the West End was destroyed.
They just knew they wanted it gone.
Well, the other thing that happened, and, you know, we need to be really clear about this, is that the federal government created huge amounts of money in the form of grants to give to cities that were willing to basically take down the slums and put something else back up there. So the BRA was just one of those authorities around the country that was there to get that money and create, you know, a new city, mm-hmm. a city that was safe for, suburbanites and safe for bankers to invest in.
And you're suggesting that we should have separate city offices of planning and development. You think that would be better for urban planning?
Absolutely. I cannot stress this enough. There is not another city in America. There's not another city in America that has planning and development under one roof. It is an inherent conflict of interest. You can't look objectively at a city when you're thinking about development.
Okay, let's bring you in, Paul, because that is the point on which I think you diverge. That, you know, you're not probably going to argue that the destruction of the West End was a great idea and we should have the BRA do more of that. But this idea of having this unified force field of the BRA.
I think it's partially a question of what's the tail and what's the dog. Does the development dictate the planning or does the planning dictate the development? And clearly one of those is a situation. You should have planning dictating development and not the other way around. But in my mind, I think this question of who makes the decisions is secondary to what those decisions actually are. And if the governance is right and the planning is right, I don't care so much who is making those calls or what the office is called, as long as the planning is solid and the decisions are solid.
Okay, so Rachel, give us some reasons why you would argue that the mayor shouldn't wield firm authority over the BRA. I mean, you have argued that the mayor is way too close, not just intertwined, but, you know, sort of the czar. And but, you know, I mean, the mayor, you know, he wields firm authority over the school department, the school system chooses a school superintendent, and you know, lots of other city agencies operate in that way. I mean, how is the BRA different?
Well, I'm not saying that the mayor shouldn't have say in what goes on in the city. Absolutely. The problem here is that city council or other elected body has no say over what's happening in terms of development. That's a serious problem. I mean, we need to have more people talking. We need to have accountability. And the way the BRA was set up and the way it continues to run is that there's very little accountability, almost none. The other problem with the mayor specifically, and I'm not talking about Menino. I mean, there's a history of mayors doing this, is that they can't resist getting involved in these, you know, big money, big decisions. And they use their relationships to determine what gets built and who builds it. And they also use their relationships to determine what doesn't get built. And in my article, I actually detail a couple of projects that didn't get built that actually would have been very good to this for the city for various reasons, but essentially because this mayor, and again, I'm not saying Menino is unusual in this, but he had the power to stop projects and he had the power to make things go very quickly. So that's really the issue. By the way, I do want to mention, and it wasn't in my article, that a lot of people actually blame this administration for the big hole in the ground that we know as the Filene's fiasco. And again, that was an example of the mayor having a lot of control. The word on the street, now I'm not saying that this is fact, but what I've heard is that the mayor was very interested in getting this done. He was very interested in this very big project happening. And so a lot of protocol was curtailed while approving the project. And so the developer actually didn't get the bond or didn't get the bond guarantee that they needed to protect the project if you know, something financially happened to slow it down. And that's why when the financial collapse happened, the project couldn't be built. There was no bond guarantee. Yeah.
Paul?
Yes.
I'm wondering, as we speak about the mayor and what the mayor's job is and what his role has been in development, you know, this particular mayor, Mayor Menino, is a bit of a micromanager in terms of, you know, choosing actual design, not just choosing which projects, but then choosing designs and being very clear about his concerns. And I'm wondering, you know, do you really think that's the mayor's job, or should the mayor maybe be delegating some of that to experts in the field?
I think as far as playing with the tops of buildings, deciding which one looks prettiest and saying this is what you shall build, or I would really appreciate it if this is what you would build. I think that's maybe managing on too much of a micro level. But I think it is important, if you have a mayor with a vision, to have the power to then carry that vision out.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of examples of supporters, campaign contributors of the mayor. Actually, you know, they're the folks getting development rights and properties. What do you, Paul, think that could be done to make that process more transparent, even if we hang on to the BRA?
I I'm going to take issue with the argument that a $500 check every year buys you development permits. I think all a $500 check to the mayor buys you every year is a year without headaches of the mayor's people asking, where's our check? I had a developer say to me, you don't pay for favors. You pay to be left alone and pay to be free to do your business. And I don't think that sort of politics is unique to the city of Boston.
I've got some callers on the line here, and I'm very curious to hear from them. Okay, we've got Tom calling from Newton. Tom, hey.
How are you?
Hey, great. You're on the air, and what's your question?
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. I did read the article, and it was fascinating from a historical perspective, just a little bit about the BRA. But a couple of questions, if you don't mind. I guess a comment, if you would, first, and then a big question for the author of the article. My experience has been that planners and architects, they like to dream. They like to dream big. But they also think that their dreams can dictate the market. And I think what the author of the story is missing here is that whatever the great vantage point of the planner and architect of what they dream something to be, the builders and the developers who have to build that sometimes don't mesh with exactly what the beautiful vision is. And so you need a Boston Redevelopment Authority or a similar agency like it to be able to dictate, here's what the market can bear and understand what the developers are going to build. And I think the writer of the article misses that point. My big question for her is this. A lot of criticisms in there about the story, stuff that we have heard from the planning community and from mayoral candidates over the years, the BRA this, the BRA that. However, what's the alternative? Is it the city council makes these decisions? Is it the Department of Neighborhood Development? The writer of the story has completely missed the point here in that what you have is one agency that can look at the city as a whole, whether it's downtown or the neighborhoods, and figure out, okay, the market right now is allowing for and financing for housing, so we're going to allow this to happen, or we're going to try and encourage new hotels to work or office buildings. And when you leave it to just planners to come up with a grand plan, that's when you get 20 to 25-year master plans sitting on someone's desktop for a long time, and no builders are going to follow the dream. So, author, what's your alternative?
Rachel?
Okay, well, again, thank you for calling in. And, the cities do work other ways, and they work very effectively. So I think we could use San Francisco as an example, if that's all right, because I did spend a lot of time talking to the chief planner there. When you have planning, it's true, you can dream big, and you can, talk about where you want people to live and make sure that And then put into the zoning code the services that they will need. So you'll need a school here. You'll need a supermarket here. Obviously, you can't actually get that built. But you write that into a zoning code. And then builders, the idea is that builders are very interested in building in Boston. And certainly they are. I mean, when you look at the amount of money that people are spending for the privilege to build here, we are no longer a depressed city anymore. I mean, people are very eager to get their foot in the door here. So you just stipulate what the heights are allowable and what uses are allowable, and the builders will come. And this hasn't been a problem for other cities like LA, San Francisco, Chicago, New York. So I don't know why we can't just put a code out there and allow developers to bid openly on the privilege to build in Boston. I think we're beyond the point where, we're begging for development.
Paul, I'm wondering, since you have more of a defense in your argument for the BRA, if you magically were starting a city from scratch, would you set it up with a BRA-type agency, or is it more that you think, well, hey, since we've got it, let's make it work? But
I think since you have it right now and it's working with some flaws, I think it's more about ironing out the governance and making the agency work in a transparent, accountable manner. Because the power to permit projects and the power to exceed, an artificially low zoning code that we have here, it's critically important. And I think, you know, all you have to do is look out to the suburbs, where the towns in the suburban belt that have a town meeting type governance are incapable of building housing in any systematic way, to show that you need an agency that has some power to say, here's what the regional need is, we have to build, and it's more a question of where do we do it and how do we make it happen than whether or not we do it.
I do want to take this moment to point out, we did at Radio Boston invite the head of the BRA, Peter Mead, to participate in this discussion, but his office declined. Rachel, what, you know, is there one city that you would really say, or you know, that is really employing what you consider best practices in this realm?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that all cities have problems, and this is a very difficult time for cities because people are really coming back into the cities. We are going to be, you know, I think as of this year, more than 50% of the world population now lives in cities. I mean, that's unprecedented. There are going to be, from what I understand, over 500,000 people coming into this region in the next 20 years or so. I mean, it's going to put a huge strain on the city. So that's my way of, you know, saying there's no perfect system. I think what I'm really arguing for is much like what San Francisco has, because they're very landbound and they have a very active population, where you have an independent planning department that works very carefully with the people to decide what's acceptable and what's not. And then you turn that into law. And then when a developer comes in, they know what's possible and what's not.
All right. Well, thank you. We have been talking about the Boston Redevelopment Authority with Rachel Slade. She's an editor at Boston Magazine. You can find a link to her recent article, The Authority, at our website. And Paul McMorrow is an editor at Commonwealth Magazine. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. You can comment about anything you hear on our website at radioboston.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Sharon Brody. This is Radio Boston.